On page 25, Ois Yud. So the Rebbe, the Piazestam, is giving us examples of how to use our imagination to strengthen our tefillah, to strengthen our avodah. But here he reminds us, in Ois Yud, as we begin, of Al Alno Yishkach Chover Achavraya as Iker Kavanah Seinu B'Chavraseinu B'nei Machshava Toiva. After I've given these examples of how to use the power of our imagination in order to conjure up images that will strengthen our tefillah, that will strengthen our tshuva, let's not forget, he says, the main purpose. Let's not forget the main purpose of creating this chavraya, this group that we called B'nei Machshava Toiva. Shelo Dai Lanu B'Machshava Kegon Zu Bilvad. It's not enough to go through life, even though it sounded fine to us, it's not enough to go through life, the Rebbe says, using this method of having to refer to these physical images in one's mind in order to generate some excitement about our avodas Hashem. Sheben kach v'kach oydin machshavas sheyesh behen tzir gufani. He says, "Sof kol sof, we're dealing with thoughts that are using physical images. Ki b'machshava atamuchrach letzayeluch hadimyon kemat gufani. B'samchach al harayvedzal. When we do this, as we learned, we're relying upon the opinion of the rayved. Uchshata bolis ayra muchrach atol letzayeluch daigos gufani es v'yam hamisa. And when you're trying to strengthen your Yiddishkeit." So you have to refer to these kind of thoughts as were described in the last ois, such as a detailed vision of what it's going to be like on the day of death and so on. Is this the goal of the man of spirit and the one of machshava, of thought, that he should have to go through life, that in order for him to feel a thought of tshuva, he has to think about his body being consumed by worms, and he has to imagine in his mind his family crying as his body is lowered into the earth and then being left alone. He says this is not the tachlis, this is not the ultimate way of serving Hashem. As we learned when he explained that Ravid, that the Ravid is merely a method, a means of going on to a higher level, of going on to the next level. So he says that Ritzaynenu Anuhu Lekroa Bekriya Achas as Kolam Mesech Aparus Al Kolachai. He says ultimately our goal is to tear open. He says Lekroa Bekriya Achas with one motion to rip aside as Kolam Mesech. That means the entire veil Haparus Al Kolachayim that is covering the essence of life. To rip open, to tear away this veil, this covering that is concealing the truth of life. And then you will suddenly, when you tear up this veil that's covering the truth, you will suddenly see yourself standing before Hashem, before a great camp, before a great gathering of angels, and you're amongst them. All of the advice that I've given, all these Aitis, these different methods, Shadibanu Adko, that we've discussed until now. Heinrak Emtsoim, these are only a means. These are only a method. Lova Ayideh Al Yodam Latachli Seinu Ha'amitis. This is not the goal, to spend one's life having these kind of thoughts and using one's imagination in such a way. These are only means for us to come to the emes, to get to the true, to our true and ultimate goal. I'm just using these in order to lift you up, in order to help you one step after another. Until finally you will be a Jew who's able to be excited about your Yiddishkeit, who's able to be on fire by having thoughts that do not require these kind of tziurim, these kind of images, these visions. You will be able to have an expansive and powerful and clean and pure thought. Which for people like us, we don't even know what that means yet. But to have a thought without using all of these gimmicks, they're gimmicks, they're holy gimmicks, but without using these gimmicks. To the point that whatever you see in life, you're going to see Hashem. Not like what we're talking about until now, that you're going to have to try to focus on certain things, and by seeing those, that ultimately as a result of having those thoughts, you will be able to have a feeling of awareness of Hashem. He says, no, the ultimate goal is to bring a Jew to a point where whatever he looks at in life, it's just the opposite. It's not that he has to try to conjure something up that will bring him to this thought, but whatever he sees in life will automatically transport him to that feeling, to that thought of godliness. The goal is to bring a Jew to a point where we're not going to have to force anymore the machshava, that our senses will function in a normal, regular way. And we're going to have to be achrichu gamas amachshava lakshav litzayirak kedemusam ketzalam dunus chushes, and that the senses, the physical senses, will be so strong that they're going to continue forever, forcing our mind to have thoughts that revolve around our physical senses. Ach lahepech, he says, I want mitzvashem. It will be the opposite. What? That amachshava tiyach heshavas machshava nekiyah. That the mind will be in control. The thinking will be in control. Right now, even he says, even the methods that we're talking about, all of this means that our physical senses are still stronger than our machshavas, than our thoughts. So we just have to find a gimmick, a way of tricking our physical senses, right? How do we do that? So we try to conjure up physical pictures in our brain, that in our brains, that will help us ultimately come to nice and pure thoughts. I'm sorry? Even that, right? Which we don't have a hasaga. What's beyond that? That sounds pretty good, right? Right. So, I mean, he's going to say that one can use this and one can, even within the machshav and the kiyah, there are moments of those type of thoughts. But what he's saying now is that until this point, all we've been discussing are using the senses, using one's physical imagery, ability to envision things, in order to awaken the sleeping soul. The neshama is asleep, so we wake up the neshama. And how do we wake up the neshama? You wake up the neshama by speaking a language that in our lives we've become familiar with, which is very physical, right? I understand what you're saying. That the question is, we'll get to that. We'll talk about that later. We're going to see, you know, where this takes us. But until now, we've been talking the language of the body. But we've been using this as a trick to wake up the soul that has learned over the course of our lives to only listen to certain things. So if you talk to people like us, if you come to the neshama and say, you know, you're going to have 2.5 hours of a ruchnistic experience, that's not something that's going to convince our neshamas at this present time in our lives to pay the price and to go ahead with that project. But if you talk about something that is going to bring some kind of an excitement that's going to, or that sense of Gan Eden even in this world, that is going to bring some sort of a benefit to you as part of living in this world, so our neshamas have grown accustomed through all these years to hearing the language of the body. But ultimately, he says, that's not the goal. Ultimately, the goal is that a person should come to Madrega where there's a machshavet tiyachashavas machshavet nekiyah, where the neshama, the thoughts of a person can be addressed in the language of thinking. And the language of thinking is a language that does not contain physical images. There's no need for physical images. Just the opposite. The Navi's body would fall apart when he would have, I'm not talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. All the other Nevi'im, at the time that they would have an experience of prophecy, their physical lives would be suspended. Their physical lives would shatter, right? They would fall into a trance, so they would collapse, and so on. So instead of it being an experience which would empower their body, and which would strengthen their connection to the physical, we understand that a Navi's physical life would fall to pieces when he would have the Nevuah. And even there are different levels of prophecy. And even there we find that there were physical images, at least as they were conveyed to the Jewish people in the prophecies, using physical images to speak to us. Because again, the Navi might have had it, the Navi's thought was presented in a way, through that Nevuah, it was presented in a way that it could be conveyed to people who are used to listening to the language of the body. That's why the prophets were always using images, sir nafuach, you know, a pot that's boiling over, and Yirmiyahu's vision of the stick with almonds and so on. All of these physical images were being used because the Nevi'im were speaking to people like us, who couldn't relate to something that was purely spiritual. But all of this, the Rebbe says, is not the goal. The ultimate goal is to come to a point, he says, of etzem hamachshava below dmus v'tziyah, to think a thought itself, which we might not have ever had once in our lives, to have a completely pure thought which does not contain any physical image at all. Umisgaberus alachushim, that will take over the senses, like with the Navi, that all of his physical senses would fall apart. V'choderus umisgala al yedehim ba'olam. Ad shekol hamasa umatan v'kol hanegiya shela im ha'olam b'lo emtsos levush achushim rak yosher machshav tistia, to the point where a person will not have to pass through different experiences and images of this physical world, but he'll be able to tap straight into his machshavas, which we don't do. Whenever we have thoughts, even the holiest thoughts, people like us, we first make stopovers in the physical world. So we think of what it was like, you know, when Zaidi put tefillin on, you know, in the old country. Or we stop and we think of what it would be like to stand by the Kaisel, as we spoke about. Or we, you know, whatever it is, we make stopovers in this world. And it's interesting because the Zohar says that before any tefillah goes up to Yerushalayim, it stops. Every tefillah stops over in Chevron. It says in the Zohar that all of our davening, the davening of course goes to Yerushalayim, right? Goes to Yerushalayim, then it goes to the Kisei HaKavod. But it says it stops over, makes a stopover in Chevron. What does that mean? That it makes a stopover? And it's a very big inyan to understand what the Zohar is talking about. We're holding by the parashas of Avraham Avinu and Tzar Yimeinu, the parashas of Chevron, that it has to stop over in Chevron. And Chevron, you know, each one of the holy cities of Eretz Yisrael is connected to one of the elements. So Tzvas, of course, is Avir. Tzvas is air. Tveria is what? Water. Yerushalayim is fire. And what's Chevron? Chevron is earth. Chevron is earth. That's why the Kedusha of Chevron is contained within the earth of Chevron, which means that the Ovis are buried there. The Ovis and the Imos are buried in that place. It's Yisoid HaOfer. That's why it was purchased from Ephron, Hachiti, Ephron, Oisius HaOfer. And there's a lot more that we could talk about that, but it's not for now. The Inyan of Chevron means Kedusha that's contained within the most physical aspects of this world. That's why even though Yerushalayim has been destroyed many, many times, the Kedusha of Chevron is in this world a fixed reality in the earth of Chevron. Yerushalayim, the Kedusha is connected to the buildings and so on. It's also connected, of course, to the place. But in terms of where the Kedusha is emanating from, in Chevron it's coming from the earth. It's the Yesod HaOfer. So the tefillahs have to pass through this place, this world, in order to rise up to a higher level. It seems that while we're in this world, we have to make stopovers in the physical world before we could move on to a higher madrega, to a higher level of Yerushalayim, and ultimately till the Kisei HaKavod. That's because we're part of this physical world, and that's the world that we're familiar with. But ultimately, he says, one should be able to head straight to Yerushalayim in one's thoughts, or one should be able to head straight to the Kisei HaKavod. Ha'ayin, ha'oizen, v'chulu, the eyes, the ears, kulam meviyim rak dvarim machshavtiyim. Ultimately, whatever we see and whatever we hear is able, a human being has the strength to reach this level. That whatever he sees and whatever he hears will bring him immediately, can bring him immediately to these pure thoughts of godliness. Lo shechoshvim anu levata b'chlal eschushi haguf. The Rebbe is saying my intention is to eradicate any sense of physical life. That's not what a Jew is, and that's not what the tachlis is of this world. Shlayira Adam Oilam Lefanov. I'm not saying that a person should not see the world, should not be part of the world. Oilam Yira. The Rebbe is saying that no, a man should be part of this world, he should see the world. Bragam is Kedushas Hashem Yizbach, next page, Yir Olav. But he should be able to see in this world the Kedusha, the holiness of Hashem Yizbach, of Hashem. Bein Shiyistakel Ala Oilam Bein Lo. That this Jew should be able to sense Hashem's holiness, Hashem's presence, whether he's looking at the physical world or not. He would be able to sense that. Veloshi is bonein bedaito bilvad, Shashem is baruch shoychen al ha'olam malchusa bekol mashola. And not just that you should have this thought that Hashem dwells upon the world and his malchus and Hashem's kingdom is everywhere. Ki kvar dibarnu eich shahadaz bilvad ein mekarevis behemes. He says, I've already explained that a pure intellectual thought will not bring you closer to Hashem. If it's left in the realm of the intellect, that will not necessarily affect your beliefs, or won't affect your emunah in the slightest bit. That won't bring you close to Hashem. And what will it help? How will it help a person if he shuts his eyes, he is bonin ba'avim, and think about the clouds? So he shuts his eyes and he's meditating upon the clouds. Will that bring the clouds down into his life? The fact that he's thinking about them, will that have any effect? Will that have any impact upon the clouds themselves to draw them into his life? What we're talking about ultimately is that a new type of thought should be able to come into your head, that you should be able to have a new type of thought. Which is in you and through which you'll be able to see and to experience everything. I guess the best way to translate that would be nowadays to use the way of I'm not talking about some fluffy thing, you know, holy, 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 and this spirituality and all these words that are thrown around. The Rebbe is saying, I'm not talking to you about something that you can't relate to. He said, I'm going to explain this. I'm not talking about things that are above this world, that transcend the reality that you're familiar with. That maybe only the greatest tzaddikim are able to reach. I'm talking about clear and certain things, clear, simple, and certain matters. I should call Ish Yisrael that every single Jew is able to reach b'ma'at his amsus with a little bit of effort. That's what he says. With a little bit of effort. There's one requirement though. There's the next two words, aval tmidis, which means what? Continuous. A little bit of effort, but continuous. People can hear that when it comes to dieting. You tell them dieting is just, you know, you have to keep it up. You don't have to kill yourself, but it's got to be. You have to be consistent. We can hear that with exercising. You can hear that with anything. And so the Rebbe is saying, Lahavdil, that when it comes to reaching this level of having, of being able to look at everything in reality through the eyes of a mammon, of a believer in Hashem, that's able to bring himself, that will, to that machshav in the key, to that pure thought of godliness. He says, this is something that I'm not, this is not a fluffy idea that I'm talking to tzaddikim, to Bnei Aliyah. I'm talking to every Jew who can do this with a little bit of effort, but it has to be consistent. It has to be consistent. Dvarim she'enam neged chukei ha'teva gamken. I'm not talking to you about doing something that's going to be opposed to the rules of nature. Make you into some weirdo. I'm not talking about that. And if it's difficult for you to understand, like we're all sitting here shaking our heads, right? If it's difficult for you to understand, if it's difficult for you to understand, how would it be possible for you to reach this level that you never imagined, not you and not any of your buddies, of your friends? Don't give up hope in reaching this. Because know this rule. Kol madrega gedola, every great madrega, every great achievement, every level that's great. V'chal mida ilah, and every exalted mida. Asher tishma, that you hear. Lo tisya'ish mimena. Don't give up hope in ever reaching that. Because we're Jews. We're the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. This is a simple rule, but most of us don't abide by it. Most of us feel that if anything, we have to just, you know, if it's some small little madrega or some tiny little mida, So we're hoping that Kulei Hai Ulai will be able to reach such a level. But the P.S.S. says it's true, you have to go little by little, and we're going to talk about that. You have to go step by step. But a Jew should not be Messiahish from the greatest Madregas. Should never be Messiahish from the greatest Madregas. You remember I once told you, Maisi here in Shul, maybe 3 years ago, from the Radzin, from the Rebbe of Gershon Hanuch, from Radzin, that there was a Maisa, he was a big Ilui. The Radzina was an Ilui Otzim, was a genius of geniuses as a young boy. And he not only that, but the Radzina was, there was a Charifus, and there was a Sharfkeit, that not everybody was comfortable with the way that he spoke, even in his later years. He was tough, and he was very, very brilliant. So there was a Maisa that, there was a Maisa from Rabbi Gershon Hanuchel that, he was by the lake. He went to the lake to go swimming, and there was a place. I guess there was a place where the men were going over there, where they would undress. Some sort of a dock or whatever it was over there, where they would undress. And there was an alta yid. There was an old chassid over there that was holding on and taking his time. He's taking his time. He couldn't do this. And Rabbi Gershon Hanuch was there, and Rabbi Gershon Hanuch was a kid. And Rabbi Gershon Hanuch said, "No, let's go." Like old man, said, "Come on! I don't have all day. I want to go swimming." So he couldn't believe it. The old chassid, a chutzpah. He couldn't believe it, you know, to say such a thing. And the old man started to say to him, "He says, do you know who I am?" So Gershon Hanuch says, "Yeah, whatever, you're Rabbi Yankel." No. So he said, "You know who my father was, and do you know where I come from?" So Gershon Hanuch is like not impressed. He's just trying to get into the water, not to go swimming. He's bechlal not impressed. And he says that, "Do you know that I learned by the Rebbe for 25-30 years? The old man says. So Gershon Hanuch says, "I'm the Rebbe's son." So move over. So he goes swimming. The old man puts back his clothing, and he heads straight to the Rebbe, right? To the Beis Yaakov, to Rabbi Gershon Hanuch's father. Comes into the Beis Yaakov. He says, "Rebbe, I can't tell you what I saw today by the Rebbe's son, man." So right away, you know, the Rebbe knew that, you know. Gershon Hanuch is sometimes saying things that... So he says, "What's the..." Beis Yaakov asked what happened. So he told him the exchange that they had. And when he told him... I didn't finish. And another thing that Gershon Hanuch said, when he says that you know, that my father's the Rebbe, so the old man said, "But you know that I how many years I'm learning already Gemara, and I'm learning the Zohar Kodesh, Rabbi Shimei Chassoi." So he kept saying to the boy, he says, "So what, my father's the Rebbe." So he says now to the Rebbe, he says, "This is what happened, that your son Gershon Hanuch said this, that and the Rebbe, the Beis Yaakov, Rabbi Yankel asked him, and what did you tell my son?" So he says, "I told your son that how could he talk that way? I'm learning by the Rebbe for years, and I'm learning by the even I was by the Kotzker and so on, and by the Rebbe's father, the grandfather, the Mashi Loach, and I'm learning the Shas and Zohar all the years. And what did my son answer you?" So my son, your son said, "So what? My father's the Rebbe himself." So when Rabbi Yankel heard that, he started to shake, because it was like his son was saying that not the Zohar is nothing, and not the Gemara is nothing, just me, right? So the Beis Yaakov started to shake, and he turned white. But then he said afterwards, so he sat there for a few minutes, and his eyes were closed for a while, and then it says in the Sefer that he opened his eyes, and he said, "Das ist takke richtig." He says, "It's takke true." He says, "As long as Reb Shimon Bar Yochai is dead," and he says, "And my father, the Mea Shiloh, is dead, and the Baal Shem Tov is dead, and Rebbe Kiv is dead, and Abai and Rav are dead, but ich leb noch, right? I'm still alive. And as long as there's one breath of life that's in me, he says, "I swear that I seek to become even greater than Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai." Can you imagine that? That was, my son was wrong. I'm not holding by that at all. But when you're comparing, it says, "Echtaki ben Alebedek, I'm alive. And the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is not alive." So there's a madrega that a Jew... He said, that's a person that's not Messiah. Imagine if someone would say to me, you're hoping one day maybe to be bigger than Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? So we would spit on the floor and say, I can't even understand one page of the Zohar. What do you mean I should be bigger than Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? I don't even know how to spell his name properly. I should be bigger than Rabbi Shimon? You say, Baal Shem, the Ariya Kodesh. What are you talking about? How could you even say such a thing? But you see, the tzaddik is not Messiahish. That's what the Beis Yaakov said. That's why I want to tell you the story. The Beis Yaakov says, if I'm alive, cool, I'm shooting for it. I'm trying. That's what the Rebbe is saying, is that one, a Jew can never be Messiahish from the biggest madrigas. Can never be Messiahish from the biggest levels. That's what he says. Look, the Messiahish manner. You should desire that madriga. See, our problem is that when you hear something, you hear like somebody's telling you about Yosel Gutnik. Ooh, Gutnik. Oh, that's a madriga. Of Yosel Gutnik, he made, you know, how much money he made, and then maybe one day I could also be in such a madriga. So then you're over on Lois Achmed, right? When you hear about someone who's Maslich, or you have a friend of yours who you know that you're smarter than him, and he pulled way ahead of you in the financial world, and he has a much nicer house, and he has more... So then you're even Lois Achmed, right? But when you see a person that reaches big madregas and someone that's a big Oved Hashem, so then our attitude is, listen, you know, that's he has a big neshama. He's a big neshama, what could I do? I mean, I'm not holding by that. Or you hear somebody that they're able to go through Shas or something, Shas, you know, I'm not holding by that. I'm not holding by that. So the Rebbe says, you know, you have to have a chemda, you have to be jealous, and you have to be envious when it comes to spiritual madrigas and want to reach them. And you have to set out on your journey to try to reach them. If you don't make it all the way there to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, okay, you make it to where you can make it. But like they say, the Musta Bali Musa used to say that if a soldier doesn't have within him a yearning to become a general, then he's not even a good soldier. That's what the Bali Musa said. If you're a soldier and your whole hasog is that your whole life you're going to be in the infantry like this, a schlepper, then you're not even a good soldier. A good soldier is someone who dreams one day of being a general. That's to be a good soldier. So if you're not a person that has she'ifas for greatness, then the question is whether you're going to even be yoytze davening in a minyan and trying to be an elohid. If you don't have she'ifas for greatness, just to be yoytze, you're not going to be yoytze. You're not even going to be a good soldier in the Baruch Shalom's army. Ki har bayanoshim kvar nevdu, because many, many people already are lost. And they never reached the level for which they were able to. They really had the kishroiness. They had the abilities to reach that level, but they never ever got there. Why? Rak mipnei yeyush hazeh, only because of despairing, only because of giving up hope. That's it. She yisodan. Where does this come from? This. So it would seem to be that it comes from where? It comes from humility. The Rebbe could have said. The Beis Yaakov could have said, I'm not a Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. I'm not my father. My father was the Meir Shiloach. I'm not anything, right? I'm not anything. The Rebbe didn't say that. The Rebbe said, as long as I'm alive, I still have the opportunity to be greater than my father. As long as I'm alive, I can be greater than my father. I am not. I'm not even right now. I'm not worthy of being stepped on by my father. But as long as I'm alive, I could still be. So he says, where does it come from? It doesn't come from humility. It's what's called in the Chassidus Ram anova psula, a falsha, a false humility. That false humility is yisoidei atzlus. Where does it really come from? What's atzlus? Laziness, plain and simple. Comes from laziness. Hisrashlus also means laziness, v'yetzahara, that's all it's from. Because you see that when it comes to other matters, when it comes to your physical life, so there you have big sheifas. Yeah, there you say, no, I'm going to be like Gutnik al-Havdil, I'm going to be like a Trump, I'm going to be like this. And you know something, even in success, when it comes to people, I've seen this also, people at work, if their hasagas are tiny little hasagas, then they're usually not too good at work, at what they're doing. Those people who they're only, I'm not saying that one should be greedy and crazy, that's not a way to live. But a person who doesn't have sheifas to be successful at work, they're usually not successful in other things either. Right? Or you get a kid in school, you get some kid that he got very firm and he said, and he's messing up all of his English tests. Not English, not math, not social studies. And you talk to him and you say, yeah, this is not something that that's for me. My own sister is tired. The Rav Moshe already said in the tshuva that a Jew who's a batlin in one area usually becomes a batlin in other areas. If you're a person who's not motivated in one thing, usually you're not motivated in other things. It spills over. So that person who's able to say that at work, I don't have big sheifas, I'm just happy to take home the minimum wages, or I'm happy to be the lowest person on the totem pole at work. That person usually is not even good at what he's doing in that lowest place in the totem pole. He doesn't have sheifas to grow. So Allah has come of a kama, how much more so that when it comes to ruchnias, where does it come from where a person should say, now I can't possibly learn the daf yomi every day, or I can't possibly go to a shir every morning, I can't possibly be a person who davens in such a way that the Rebbe is describing it, to come to a level of being a ben machshava toiva, of having thoughts that are pure thoughts. It's not possible for a person like me. He says, that's not coming from humility. That's not coming from humility. Why don't you exercise your humility when it comes to physical hasagas? If you want to be humble, why don't you try it out first with physical things? What does that mean? You know, a person like me really doesn't deserve to have such a nice house. I'm not really worthy of having such a pretty wife. I'm really not worthy of having such perfect children. That's interesting. When it comes to these things, then everybody's so demanding. Everybody holds himself to be a Rebbe Shimon. This is coming to me. Come to me. Well, who are you that you should have such a nice house? And who are you that you should have such a nice... Who are you? So there you're not an honor, right? So there you're saying you're holding... I'm worthy and I deserve it. But all of a sudden, when someone's telling you that you could have a machshava that's a pure, clear machshava of the Rabbi Shalom, then you say, I'm not worthy. So where does that come from? It comes from atzlus, it comes from laziness. That's all. Velu rotsu, lenasa is lahafil velalis lat lat. And if we would run a little bit to try to climb la'alis, to lift ourselves up, lat lat, one step after another, slowly, psia achre psia, one step after another, lahoyu mevalim as kol yumei in berefesh. We wouldn't spend our entire lives in the refesh, meaning what? In the schmutz, in the dirt. Lahoyu ma'abdim as kol ha'or. And we wouldn't waste and throw away all of the light, the holak kodesh, and all that is holy. Shahayamuchan lahem, that's been prepared for us, I'm sorry, that we have all this light and all this kedusha that Hashem has given us since we're Jews. We wouldn't sit in the mud all of our lives and just say, nah, I can't really do it, that's not shaykh to me. If we would just go one level at a time, we would lift ourselves up, we would see that it's not true, it's simply not true. Lachain, as kuntras achavraya kedusha shalonu, this little booklet that I'm putting out for our to start our chavraya, to start our group, unfortunately a short time after the Chavraya was established, that's when the Nazis came to power and things started to fall apart. So the dream that the Rebbe had, he prepared this little manual for the group. This was the manual for the group, like a required reading to be part of the Chavra. But Lemaisa, what happened then with the Milchama, and subsequently it was even before the Milchama, there were other interruptions. They had sorrows. The Milchama didn't happen all at once. You know, that from the years already, it started to get very bad in Poland already, 36, 37, 38. You know, things were deteriorating terribly. Before the actual invasion of Warsaw, things were already beginning to deteriorate. There wasn't a simple matzav over there. The financial matzav and so on. So it's tragic that the Rebbe didn't have a chance, really, that to put all of this to use with that chevra, which his intention was, to go through the years and to bring them up and to raise a generation of chassidim who would be leaders of the Jewish people. So he raised Hasidim who died al Kiddush Hashem. That's pretty much what the Rebbe was able to accomplish, and it's only by a miracle that we have these writings now. But this was his intention. He says, "Therefore, I put out this little booklet." He says, "Loite poter b'kriya greida bilvad." I don't want you just to read this. I don't want you just to read this. This isn't like, you know, something you go to sleep with and you lie down with a little nash and you look at this before. This is not what I want. You should just read it. Rak tilam deyu benachas. I want you to learn it carefully, benachas, slowly, to learn it benachas. See, that's, you see, when you read something in English, even though I've already, as you know, I expressed my negative feelings about the translation, the English translation of the Bnei Machshava Toiva, that I don't believe that it certainly is not coming from a person who is steeped in Chassidus, and also. The translation is not accurate, simply not accurate. And I looked for much more of it after I said that, because then I felt maybe I shouldn't have said it. But now I confirmed that I definitely should have said it, and I'm even more upset about it, that it's an inaccurate translation, and it's coming from a person who's primarily a secular person. So the what the Rebbe is saying is Talamdeu Benachas. You see, when that's one of the dangers of when you read a Chassidish Sefer or a deep Sefer, you read in English, right? There's a problem with that, because there's a difference between reading and learning. This is just a side note. Whenever we read something in Lashon HaKodesh, we learn it, and learning is not the same thing as reading. It's not the same thing as reading. Years ago I said to my wife, I forgot what book, you know, it's wonderful that they have all these English books, that people are able to, that they have access to wonderful, to Torah, it's great. But I said to my wife that, you know, you're going to see that it's going to come a time where they're going to translate the Shai Gazariah into English. And they're going to start translating Brisk Svarim into English. And lo and behold, I saw last week in the newspaper, Brisk on Chumash, a book. Brisk on Chumash. Okay, so it's on Chumash, you know, it says on the base, it's on Chumash, so that's not. But if they come out with a Brisk, if they start translating Reb Chaim Brisker, you know, the Rambam, I'm packing up. I'm leaving. Because that's Bli Neder. Because learning that there's a difference between learning and reading. And the tendency of a person is that if you get a Sefer in English, so you know, the same way that you're used to perusing through the Times and the paper, looking for some interesting headline or something that might catch your eye, it's the nature of a person to read things that way in English. That's why in certain professions, I guess in law, a person has to be trained how to read something in a way where he's medayik so carefully in every single word, right? where a person has to be retrained to learn. We're not learning. That's why you could read something 20 times, and then when the professor tells you that on Monday there's an exam, whoa, and then you start to learn it, even though you read it 20 times, right? Or when it gets to the last hour before the exam. So you could have wasted 20 hours sitting around and reading and like this and like that. But now you're learning something. That's called benachas. The Rebbe says, I don't want you just to read this Sefer. I want you to learn it, benachas. Which we're trying to do.
Is the same translation for the Kodesh of Malibu, the same
author? No, that's wonderful. Adenheimer did a beautiful job. He's a Ben Torah, he's a Talmud Chacham, and he did a beautiful job. And there it was coming from a kosher place. The person who did the Bnei Machshava Tov is a member of one of these New Age spiritual groups, which one particular person who she's a student of, that is someone that went off the derech years ago. Now the Chavetz Talmidim is a masterpiece of the translation, and Tehillah Sol also, that they put out the Tehillah Sol also is a nice job. The fellow did a nice job. It's Chassidish Yid, he did a very nice job. But the Bnei Machshava Tov is a failure. And it shows, that, you know, proves that when a person is not coming from the right place, although I'm sure her intentions are pure, she sounds like a wonderful person. And just judging by the introduction, so she sounds like a very special person, a very fine person who's seeking the truth. And I don't mean, God forbid, to put her down. But it's not coming from a place of Shmiras HaMitzvahs, a strong sense of Shmiras HaMitzvahs, and so on. So, you know, you're always in danger when you speak about spirituality and you're not grounded in Shulchan Aruch. So that's dangerous. Those are dangerous waters. You have to be very, very careful when it comes to these things. Therefore, the Rebbe says, don't just read the Sefer once. The Rebbe says you should read a section and then think about it, spend some time mulling it over. You don't have to rush. Divide up over a few days. In other words, don't read this just in a day or two, because it's a small little sefer, you might want to just rush through it. A little bit today, a little bit tomorrow. And if you finish this little sefer, review it a second time and a third time. Try to become familiar, to recognize the nature of what this is all about, to have a connection to this kuntus, to this sefer. He kamoha adam, just like a human being. Eev shalakol chiyusa laharis be'ever echad. You can't recognize, the Rebbe's saying this is something else that's dangerous when a person learns. With a human being, you can't recognize that entire person simply by being familiar with one limb, with knowing his arm or his foot. You can't really know the person by knowing a piece of the person. Rak b'ramach evarim, only when you know the entirety. V'rak ben kulam k'shemitzarefim b'skira achas, es kol evarim, and only when with one glance you're able to have you're able to conjure up the image of that entire person from head to toe. You're able to have the whole picture. Nikeres Tzuras Adam Shalom. Only then can you recognize the Tzuras Adam, the complete form, the image of the person. So he says, Kein Gam Tzura Ha'achas Asher B'chol HaKuntris. He says it's the same thing when it comes to this Kuntris, to this book. He in the Fredes L'mamarim La'etzas L'mamarim. It's true that when you learn this Sefer, you will find that it's divided into all different types of advice and different sections and so on. But if you only are going to focus on one part of the Sefer, Rak Eivr Echad Mitachlis Aram, then you're only going to see one limb of what I have in mind. Utsrichim, next page, 27, Letzarev Vilvavenu Venafshenu Eskola Nimtzabo. It's only after you've learned it carefully and you've reviewed it many times, it's like that with any Sefer. After you reviewed it carefully and you've studied it many times, then you're able to have a connection to Eskola Nimtzabai, to all that's in it. Then you will see that all of this is really one point that I'm making. One consistent, new, strong way to come to Hashem. And if you just look at a little piece and say, that's a nice little piece of advice, and I'm going to focus on that, you've missed the point. We have to be faithful to the guidelines of the Chevra that we learned the first day when we first began studying the Sefer that's discussed at the beginning. That's why I've mentioned before in the shul that there's a famous thing that they say about, you know, that I'm sure you all remember, that Reb Chaim Brisker was once having an argument with a huge Talmud Chacham, who, and the other Talmud Chacham was known to be a big buck. He was known to be completely proficient in all of Shas by heart. Reb Chaim was a genius, and he knew Shas, but as far as knowing every single Tosis and Rashi, Reb Chaim, that wasn't his thing. And Reb Chaim's Ikka was what? The sharpness and the analysis. But the one who he was with was somebody that was known for his complete and total mastery of all Torah Shabbat Peh. So they were once sitting with a group of Talmid Chacham and Reb Chaim and the other one, they were going at it, you know, and everybody sat back. And that one who knew all of Shas said that it says something in Tosfos in a certain place, and Reb Chaim said it doesn't say that in Tosfos. And everybody said, ooh. And the one that knew everything said it says it in Tosfos. And Reb Chaim says it doesn't say it in Tosfos. So they were sitting without any svarim, right? So then somebody ran to get the Gemara and open it up, and everybody saw that Reb Chaim was right. And the Talmud Chacham, the one that was that big bucky, so he admitted, and he says, I didn't know, he says, Reb Chaim, how did you remember that line of Tosfos? You remember that line of Tosfos? He says, no, I didn't know the Tosfos by heart, but I know that Tosfos couldn't have said such a thing. I know Tosfos couldn't have said such a thing. Just like you could say, if someone would tell you, that Imam said something like, and Imam said the following thing, 10 years ago, and you remember you were there, so you might say, no, my mother never said that. Not because you have a total recall of what happened, the last conversations, or the conversations over the last 10 years. You don't have total recall of all those conversations, but you know your mother. You know the whole person. You know that she could not possibly have said such a thing. She simply could not. It's not part of her repertoire. It's not her. So she couldn't have said it. So Haskam of Akam, so Reb Chaim was able to say, Tosfos never said such a thing. Even though Reb Chaim might not have seen every single cell, he might not have remembered every word, but he knew Tosfos. He knew what Tosfos is about, because he has a feeling for Tosfos' method, and Tosfos has a method throughout. Throughout, there's a method to Tosfos. Tosfos has a certain way of thinking everywhere. Tosfos is consistent everywhere. Just like Beisham and Beisillel, there's a certain way of thinking that's consistent throughout Shas. And every single opinion that you'll find from Beishamai, that thought will be guiding the teaching of Beishamai and by Beisillel, the same thing. Every single piece of learning has that, the entirety of the person contained within it. So too, the Rebbe is saying over here that I'm asking you to try to see this in an organic way, in a holistic way, not just to recognize and to become attached to certain pieces that inspire you or that you're interested in. And the only way to do that is by looking and learning slowly and carefully, giving some time, thinking about it, reviewing it. That's the only way to come to that. Ayisid Aleph. Harbe hargoshos yeshnon shepsichosam banu hen kepoite mayim. There are many feelings within a person that when they are opened, when we unlock those feelings, they begin to emerge in a faucet that's dripping. You know, it just drips a little bit out. A little bit comes out. kalos uklushos, very light and very weak. V'hoyim narchiv achas mehen. But if we would focus on one of those emotions, mostly that's how we live in this life, in this world, that we have, you know, little drips of things coming out, emotions and so on, feelings, unless, God forbid, there's some terrible tragedy when where it could be that the emotions are unleashed in a very powerful way, or it should be bettered by a big simcha that releases some sort of an emotion. But generally, they're just little trickles of emotions. But the Rebbe's saying, but im hayin narchiv achas mehen. But if we would really focus on any one of these little drops of emotion, v'neitzia el apoil, and we would take it to the end zone, right? We would really go with one of these little drops. Then ta'as te'osel nahar gadol. It would become a great river. Any one of these drops could become a great river. We just don't do that. We just feel these little trickles of emotions, and we don't work on them. We just say, okay, that was a nice little drop of some feeling, or that was a miserable little drop of some feeling. But we don't try to develop these feelings. We just let them go. But the Rebbe is saying that if we would focus on any one of them, they could, each one could become a river. Ulapal gemayim, rushing waters. Ashalo yichaz v'meimav, and the waters would never stop. It would be a river that would be flowing forever. V'im ein marchivim aysa, but if you don't expand, if you don't work to develop each one of these drops, then te'oved baltira shevish, then it will be completely lost. We'll never see the light of the sun. It'll be gone. Yesh l'famim shahayish margish l'marshal in the imus b'kibba. Now he says, let's talk about l'maisa. She says, sometimes a person will feel some unpleasantness within him. There's something in the imut, something not pleasant. So he feels something, he's uncomfortable with something. V'eni yodei im tzarech l'echol v'lishon, and he doesn't know what to do. You're living in it. You don't see yourself in it. You can only see yourself afterwards. And then when we're going to be old, all of us, Mitzvah Hashem, we should be old and healthy and well with our wives and our families in good health. Then we're going to look back and we're going to have all these sentimental thoughts. We already have them from when we were kids, right? You don't have thoughts when we were kids, and all these the unbelievable feelings that we look back and we think about, you know, certain things. But look, b'shas ma'isa, like, I think of this all the time now. Like, you know, I'm looking at my parents, they're getting old, and I'm thinking, you know, Rabbi Shalom, help me hold on to these thoughts. You know, to hold on to these thoughts, to these feelings that I have of love and of admiration, and not to be someone that just spends the next 50 years looking back and saying, oh, it's giving good, what did I have? I didn't know that I had it. Let me have it now, instead of just being with somebody that's always looking back and saying, it could have been and I didn't appreciate it, or then in my mind's eye, I make it into something that was, you know, at the time you can't appreciate things. At the time, you can't appreciate it. You look now at the children, you see your kids playing and having a good time, and you walk back overwhelmed with responsibilities, and you look at your list of phone calls, and you hear your messages, and you know that you didn't do this, and you have to do that, and you feel like you're breaking. And you look at the kid, and the kid's only responsibility is to make this block go on top of that block. And you look at this, and you say, Rabbi Shalom, the kid's so lucky, it was such a good thing. But when you're there, when you're a kid, you're just thinking, these blocks are stupid because my friend has better blocks. These are the worst blocks. My parents are stingy creeps. They got me the cheapest blocks. And I got the worst blocks over here. So this is how we go through life. And we're trained to think like that. We train ourselves to think that way from the time that we're little children. That we can't take hold of something. So the Rebbe is saying that you have a hargosha of simcha. It just goes away. It comes and goes. That's not what it means to be a Jew. It means to be able to have hargosh of simcha, that trickle of simcha, and to take hold of it, and to work on it, and to develop it, and to apply it, and to plug it into many, many things in your life. That you should be able to conjure up a feeling of simcha at will. Not just till it happens that something happy, you know, that you have a happy experience, and you say, ah, oh, and you feel good for a minute, and then, ah, oh, it goes. Then we go through all of life like that thing in the doctor, you know, the heart, you go through your whole life, ups and downs. Why? Because you're at the mercy of what's happening around you. If it's an event that makes you feel good, ah. And then if it's an event that makes you upset, ah. But you have no control. That's the most horrible thing. That's why people spend billions of dollars going to movies, and on drugs, and on alcohol, and on these novels. Look, I read in the paper last year sometime. I tell you the truth. You know, in general, America is just really deteriorating. In general, I mean, It's deteriorating. So, I read in the newspaper that there are billions of dollars spent every year on these romance novels. You know, like they have they're all over the place, like these trashy romance novels with dirty covers, like, you know, and they found that something like 98% of them are being bought by married women, the middle age, heading towards older. So you think it's rachmanis. What are rachmanis? Because, you know, we don't have to, no one has to say, Rachel Bitchaktana, why is it that they're buying these things, and why are they losing themselves in these places? Why do they have to have these ridiculous fantasies instead of appreciating the person that you're living with for 30 years, 40 years, and being able to love that person? Being able to develop an emotion with the people that you love. Instead, what people will do, because it's much easier, because the Rebbe said this, that to be a Jew requires constant, small effort, but constant. You don't want to do that. It's the easiest thing in the world. You go to Blockbuster, you take out a thing, you smash it into the machine over there, you turn on the button, for 2 hours you're in love, for 2 hours you hate, for 2 hours you're some kind of a gibber fighting a war, you know, to save the world. Whatever it is, for 2 hours. But you know how wonderful it is? It doesn't create any responsibility. It's such a nice thing. You see, because when you love your wife and you show love to your children, that creates additional responsibility, because then you're going to have the guilt an hour later when you're not like that. But not with a movie. With a movie, you just give it back to Blockbuster. You just trade it in for another stupidity. You just trade it. So there's no expectation. There's no demand. The movie is not demanding anything from you emotionally. It's just giving you a fast high, and it gives you that pleasure for that moment, for that hour, 2 hours. It doesn't require anything. It doesn't ask from you. It's easier to enjoy grandchildren than children, kiyadua, because the grandchildren is just a have, it's just love, with minimal demands that are being made. When it comes to a parent, every single emotion that you pour into a child, you know that you're going to have to pay for it, kefil kiflayim, with responsibilities. Therefore, there's something bizarre inside of us that says, hold your emotions back. Don't develop these emotions, because it's going to create within you more of a responsibility, which brings us back to what the Rebbe says, that our problem is laziness. Laziness. We just don't want to do that. We don't want to do it. We'd rather spend our lives waiting for these little drops of emotions to appear and to say, hey, that's nice, and then to go weiter. To go weiter. Not to work. Not to be a balavoider. As that's what he says, V'chilafam b'hagosha simcha chadoyim. Oh, just not 2 minutes. To the paragraph, the kaven shalei nechzer hargosha zuba levush gufani ki eva shalei neshama toher hushata. When you're feeling happy about something, you should know that your neshama is reaching out one of its hands. Your neshama is screaming, "Come on, take hold of this." Lachain layoda ha'ish mahi. But you never really did. You never really worked on it. You never really tried to bring it into your life. You just let it. You know, you took a ride with that emotion, but that's it. So then he says, you never really know what it is. You never really know. It could be that we've gone our whole lives, we don't really know what simcha is. We don't know what simcha is. of simchas. We don't really know what simcha is. Umahu margish bekir, but we don't even know what we're feeling. Min kiskus upirpu hanefesh. So you should know that it's a little bit of like when you take a bell, and you shake it. It's a little bit of an alarm, a little bit of a sound that's coming, a little bit of a fluttering. Pirpu means a fluttering. A kiskus is a fluttering that's coming from the nefesh, from the soul. Vushos yayin sarav. And you had a glass of schnapps. This is what I was screaming about the night of Simchas Torah. This is the kind of drinking that's not, that those people who say, I'm a chassid shiit, I drink. This is what the Rebbe's talking about. There are Jews who drink. There's a drinking of holiness that's to do what? To deepen the simcha. To strengthen the machshava in Avodas Hashem. And there's another kind of drinking that's just to forget. That's just to forget.
So how do you know which one is
this? Yeah, you have to be very honest. An honest person knows. So you just went and you stuffed yourself, you did something else in this world. You should know, the Rebbe says, you didn't quiet down the throes of your soul, you know, the sound that your soul is making. You didn't really quiet. All you did was you strengthened the sounds of your body. In other words, there's something inside of you that's making you feel a certain way. So you go and you drink, or you get involved in something in this world. So he says, you still have those emotions. All you did is you took your physical life and you made them scream and yell and you made them loud, right? That's why. Why is it that as the world deteriorates more and more as it prepares for the coming of Mashiach, why is it that the music is getting louder and louder? Do you ever wonder about that? Why is it that the music is getting louder and louder? That now when you're driving on the street and you stop at a stop, at the light, at the stop sign, you get scared because you think there's an earthquake, because your car starts to shake, because there's some machine in the next car that he's... I don't even know how he... I don't know how his brains don't fall right out of his head. Whatever, I mean, unless there's nothing there to begin with, but something, it's unbelievable. Why is the music getting louder and louder? So, you know, the terrorist is because that's the struggle is a great... There's a greater struggle and an effort not to think about anything. To quiet... So all I have to do is to make the world louder than my emotions. Because unfortunately, many people who are miserable, who don't have those pleasant thoughts to think of, or those pleasant memories to look back to, there's only one eitz, and the eitz is drown them out, and you have to just make everything louder. Just make it louder. You know? When you see someone that's always got to be the life of the party, hey, you know, everybody's got to have the biggest joke and the last lift, and he's got to be this kind of guy. So you know, when you look at that, it's not a rahman, it's because you know that the guy is just trying not to hear something. And he has to be in a constant state of there's always noise. Because he can't be quiet. He can't hear himself. He can't hear his neshama. So the Rebbe says, you know you have these emotions, but what are you going to do? You're just going to make the rest of the world. You turn on the volume and everything else. You turn up the volume. This way you don't have to face the fact that there are these emotions that are in you. You just turn up the volume. That's what it means. You give your body... What you do is you do something physical that your body should start screaming and yelling that I shouldn't think of these things. The kol ha-nefesh lo yishama. And then the sound of the soul will not be heard. Allah Yishma, you won't hear the sound of the soul. He says, Moshal, can this be compared? Moshal Kaimre HaMelech. I think it should be Moilech, not Melech. It means priests of Molech. You know the worship that they were the ones that were sacrificing their children, right? Molech, a type of an Avodah Zarah. Shehiku Besupim Laman Lo Yishma Ha'av. Hamayas Beno, that in the worship, in that worship where children were being, human sacrificed, where children were being sacrificed, and they used to play the drums very, very loud. Why? So that the father won't hear the screaming of the child. You hear this, Marshall? They used to bang on the drums, they used to bang on the music very loud, so that you shouldn't hear the scream, the father who's there shouldn't be, even though the father's bringing the sacrifice, but he shouldn't hear, because if he could hear the kid crying, it could be, he would say, forget it, this is crazy. I'm giving up. I'm going to some other religion. So the father shouldn't hear the screaming of the child. Mischanin, who the child is screaming, Abba, Abba, Father, right? You shouldn't hear it. Mibein lahavi ha-moylech, amidst the flames of the moylech. Hagoshos gufi yoseinu ra'ashos. This is what happens to us all the time. That he says that our bodies, the senses, our physical senses, are making such a loud noise. Ad shiri'idas ha-nefesh overis l'batol, till the crying of the soul is not even heard. That's an unbelievable marshal. You could use that everywhere, every time, till you're 120, this marshal, right? V'hi min ha-polas nefolim shel ha-neshama, he ends by saying, is the same way as miscarrying. Like a mother who's miscarried, God forbid, a baby, it's the same thing, that your neshama had a miscarriage. He says it's a miscarriage of your neshama. There was a baby, there was something that could have been. You had an emotion, you had a feeling, it could have become a machshava, it could have been something to make you a greater person. But you miscarried. Because you just started screaming and yelling and carrying on. You made a noise, you turned up the volume, you banged on the drums, and that thought, that feeling of the neshama that could have brought you to something greater and closer to Hashem, it just died on the floor of your room or of the shul, wherever you are. It just, it's laying dead. Vizahu is finished. So, we're going to learn in Yitzhak Hashem more and more of how to see to it that we have healthy, full-term feelings and thoughts, that we should be able to give birth to the kind of people that we need to become.